Welcome, everyone, to yet another emergency episode of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. It is Thursday, July 11th, and just when you thought it was safe to sleep, Russell Westbrook has been traded not to the Miami Heat, not to the Detroit Pistons, but to the Houston Rockets for Chris Paul and another boatload of picks. We're going to break it down from both sides. We'll start with Houston, then hit OKC. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. It would really help us out. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable, very sleepy genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Brian, this is the last trade that I have to stay up for, right?
You say that now, and then like Bradley Beal's going to get traded in 3 days or something.
or Kevin Love or something.
Yep. right.
Yeah, so full disclosure, it is 5 a.m. here. I've basically spent the last few days staying up for this exact event, because of course it had to happen.
Right.
And I was sitting there going, oh, okay. The trade goes down, and you were like, "Oh, I'm going out to eat."
Yep.
Which was not great, but yeah. I mean, of course, you're allowed to have some time off while sure. I'm sitting here staying up, Ryan. I hope you feel lousy. Yeah.
If your video feed was on, you could see me drinking champagne right now because it is also my 5-year wedding anniversary is tomorrow. So thankfully, it happened tonight instead of tomorrow. But yeah. I had to spend a little bit of time with my wife. To apologize for being completely absent for the past 2 weeks.
No, I'm pretty sure she used to it.
Oh, yeah. It's just every July. It's good because she's a doctor. So July 1st in the hospital is the worst time. If you're ever going to get sick and go to a teaching hospital, do not get sick in July. Go to a place that is not an academic hospital because it's just an absolute war zone. So she's been dealing with that. I've been dealing with the NBA blowing up. It's been a crazy 2 weeks for both of us. So
she's saving lives and you're not.
Talking about basketball on the internet, yes. Which one's more important? I don't know. The jury remains out. We'll see.
Well, you know what? The jury doesn't remain out, at least according to me, on the Thunder here. On the Rockets.
Yeah. Let's jump right into the Rockets side of things. So from what I've seen, they gave up Chris Paul.
Yep.
Just for the salary matching purposes. Top 4 protected first round picks in 2024 and 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And the rights to swap first round picks in 2021 and 2025.
Correct. And hey, I want partial credit because I brought up the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook thing weeks ago.
Yeah, indeed. I didn't see a way they were going to make it work. Such that, like, obviously the salaries work, but I just didn't think Houston would give up enough draft compensation to make it worth OKC's while.
Yeah, I didn't even think they should have given up draft compensation, but okay.
I mean, they had to. I think Russell Westbrook is still a better value asset than Chris Paul. I know he's got. Yeah, I know he's got an extra year on his deal, but he's still younger. He's better right now.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
And I mean, if you're all about, from the Rockets' perspective, you're all about increasing James Harden's window of contention, basically. So who does that
and
more?
And you do that with probably the player in the league most opposite Morey Ball.
Right. Well, I mean, I am genuinely excited for Russ and Harden to be back together. This is one half of my favorite NBA 2K team of all time, the 2012 Thunder. So for that reason, I am genuinely excited. This might be the first time I buy 2K in years. Since like 2013, honestly.
Yeah.
But yes, well, let's talk about the on-court fit first and then what they gave up. Because on-court fit is somewhat iffy, if you're just
somewhat
looking at it.
Iffy. You're being very polite.
I mean, they played together before, and maybe they realize now that there's no way out. Like, you're not from Harden's perspective, reportedly he soured on Chris Paul, or Chris Paul soured on him, or vice versa, or they both just grew to dislike each other. There have been multiple reports coming out this offseason suggesting that. You're not getting out of Russell Westbrook's contract unless you're giving up more picks, probably, at this point, or taking on even worse salary. So they are effectively stuck with each other. And in that regard, maybe they realize, okay, this is it. If we're going to win a ring, it's going to be with the two of us together, and we're going to have to figure out a way to make this thing work.
Right. So here's my problem with it. Russell Westbrook's biggest strength is his playmaking. He's a fantastic playmaker.
Right.
When the ball is in the hands of James Harden to the extent that it is, this becomes a question of how will Harden adjust to Russ and us, not vice versa. Russ is a very willing passer. Yeah. He is the type of guy who can initiate the offense in a multitude of ways, and he can put pressure on a defense, and he can find shooters in the corner, he can find cutters, he can find lob threats. Like, he's got the whole passing package. That's just a problem to me if Harden decides to still go on this whole, solo extravaganza that he's been on over the past couple of years.
Right.
And should he change his tune, right, then you have to wonder, oh, okay, why wouldn't you do that before with Chris Paul, who's a better shooter, who would have been utilized a lot better had you not, gone on this ISO-heavy, ball-dominant mentality.
Right.
So why do it for now with a non-shooter? Like, that just makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, the only thought I have to counter that is that Russ can get downhill much better than Chris Paul can. That was not really ever his strength. I mean, his strength was his passing vision and his shooting, and Russ is just a freight train.
Right.
So maybe Harden wanted someone else to really be able to facilitate the offense in transition in that way, to be able to push the pace. And I agree. I'm the half-court fit worries me the most as well, because, if Harden is going to continue the dribble for 20 seconds at the top of the key while four other guys stand around, that's concerning, because Russ is a much worse shooter than CP3. Defensively, you said it last episode, his reputation precedes him at this point. He used to be a much better defender than he is now, but he's especially falls asleep off the ball, which is not a great pairing with James Harden, who has gotten better on that end, but is still nowhere near an elite defender. There are definitely a lot of questions about the half-court fit, but I can at least talk myself into maybe this is the opposite version of what Philly's trying to do with Embiid and Horford, where it's basically a very expensive insurance package. So Harden can now, in theory, play fewer minutes in the regular season because he has this secondary creator who is proven capable of running a team by himself and putting up huge numbers and carrying them to 45 wins or so. Now you can kind of stagger the minutes between the two such that, sure, they're going to have to play together for 15 or 20 minutes a game, but now, in theory, you will have one of Russell Westbrook or James Harden on the court for all 48 minutes. And that will make Houston a dangerous team offensively for all 48 minutes.
This just makes Eric Gordon the most crucial piece in all of this. Because he's the guy who has to play with both of them.
Right.
Like, he's when James is in and Russ is out, that means that Gordon is going to be the sidekick. And vice versa when Russ is in and Harden is out.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a three-man guard rotation where you actually have to wonder if there's even space for another guy to come in there. Like, there has to be a shooter in there at all times to flank both those guys.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they brought back Austin Rivers on the min deal, the two-year min deal, so I think he'll get minutes. But then, yes, it's the question of, in theory, then one of those guys is playing small forward, which leaves them even more vulnerable defensively, because none of them really, I guess, Harden might be the one to draw those assignments.
Yeah.
Just based on his size, and he can maybe handle that, but he's by no means an elite wing stopper.
Right. Maybe Eric Gordon at the three? He's strong. Moves his feet well, I guess. I mean, look, they got away with playing 6'5 PJ Tucker at center.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah,
I mean, their options are limited, and it might not come back to bite them in the regular season, but, you know, we'll talk about the West kind of refiguring out where everywhere stands in a later episode, but just mentally, when I'm thinking about all of these top West contenders now, I'm thinking about how do they match up with the Clippers? How do you...
Poorly.
Right. How do you match up with Kawhi and Paul George? And
yeah.
PJ Tucker can deal with one of those guys, but which member of the backcourt is going on the other one?
Right. And honestly, can he though? I get right. what you're saying, but I mean, you can he can slow them down just a little bit,
yeah.
but I mean, it's still elite offensive players.
Yeah.
They're going to get theirs and likely efficiently.
Right. Yeah, it's they'll put him on one of them. He will be better at defending them than probably anyone else on the Rockets, but
right.
Yes, it's very much a bad pick your poison scenario for the Rockets here where they just don't really have elite wing stoppers, and if they do run into the Clippers in the playoffs, that looms as a significant problem.
Yeah. I kind of feel as though the Rockets are just stuck. I didn't like their chances coming in, even if they hadn't done this trade. And I agree that they got better in terms of individual talent. Like, they got a talent injection.
Sure.
But I wonder if the fit, because it's not a great fit, let's just be honest, it's not a great fit.
Mm-hmm.
If that just negates that talent acquisition that they got. Plus, and I know that a lot of people are saying that it's a one season, whatever, we shouldn't put any stock to it. But I mean, when you look at Russ's last season, like he's gone down almost, what was it, 19 percentage points on the free throw line, right?
Over the past two seasons, yeah. He was like close to an 80% shooter before he fell into the 70s. Not right. This past season, but the season before. And then, yeah, he was in the mid-60s this year.
Right. So it's been two consecutive dips.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, his true shooting percentage has gone down as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was at 50.1 this year, which is abysmal.
Right. It's not great.
And he's going to be 31. So I know that I sound like a broken record, but these things are relevant in the grand scheme of things. It seems to me that a lot of people out there are going, oh, now he goes to the Rockets and he's going to be the same old Russell Westbrook. But that logic seems flawed to me when we have statistical evidence suggesting that he is on the decline, and heavily, in fact.
And, I mean, the bigger problem from my end is if he's the same old Russell Westbrook, then that means James Harden has taken a significant step back. Because James right. Harden has been so ball dominant that if Russ is... I mean, what was Russ's usage rate last year? It had to be north of 30, I'm guessing. Yeah, 30.9. The season before that, 34.1. And then his MVP season, 41.7.
Oh, jeez.
Harden is also a high usage guy. Last year, he was at 40.5% usage rate. This is the only one ball problem. Harden plays on the ball a lot, and he's been very effective in that role. He's a great passer as well. So, I mean, maybe Russ is just the primary creator now, and Harden just absorbs more of the role he did last year, where he just focuses almost exclusively on scoring and is a secondary playmaker. He averaged 36 points a game last season. He's plenty capable of doing so. But yeah, it's going to be tricky, I think, to get these two guys to buy in to a collective system. And it wouldn't surprise me, based on the reports that came out, it sounds like Chris Paul in particular had issues with the system Mike D'Antoni ran. And he wanted right. more movement from players and the ball. And Harden was content just ISOing because he's super effective in that role.
So I'm glad you said that in terms of effective. Because we agree that James Harden recognizes, you know, that he's a great advanced metrics type of guy, right? Like, he takes pride in his efficiency.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's bought into the concept of Morey Ball.
Right.
Now, I get that he was, you know, behind this whole acquisition of Russ. Like, he actively went to the Rockets and said, I want Russ. And Russ, on the other end, was like, I want to go to the Rockets. So this was a situation where two former teammates, you know, spoke and wanted to get together again. I get all of that. But when push comes to shove and the regular season starts off and Westbrook is potentially woefully inefficient, like, how will that affect James?
Right. Well, and if you're sticking Russ in a Morey ball system where you're encouraging him to take more threes, how is this career 30.8 three-point shooter, the guy who shot 29% from three last year on 5.6 attempts per game, do you really want to be encouraging him to take more of those shots?
Oh, it's even worse than that. For a guy who's taken that many three-pointers over the course of his career, he's the worst three-point shooter in NBA history.
Yeah, so there are clearly a lot of on-court questions to sort out.
Right.
Let's talk about what they gave up.
Well, before, there's actually one off-court issue as well.
Okay.
And we kind of talked about this on the last podcast as well. So Russ comes from a system in OKC where everything was tailored to his needs.
Right.
That's not going to be the case in Houston. Everything's going to be tailored to James Harden.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen so many times where OKC media has just let him do whatever, or the Thunder's media representatives have allowed him to just be honestly a dick towards the local media. And the national media. Like, that's, I think that's fair to say. There have been no repercussions. That's not going to fly in Texas. That's not going to fly in Texas at all. And I have to wonder if this is going to be something where they sit him down and go, hey, we know you've been used to a certain luxuries, honestly, over your 11 years in OKC, but that's not going to fly here.
Right.
And what's the reaction going to be to that? Because he's going to be stuck there for the next 4 years. Potentially.
Yep.
Until they trade him for Andrew Wiggins.
All right, so let's talk about what they gave up now.
Right.
Two protected, lightly protected, top four protected first-round picks, two pick swaps. Part of it is to get out of Chris Paul's contract. I mean, that's, you could effectively say one pick swap and one first-round pick is just the price you're paying to get out of the contract, and then the other pick and the other pick swap is the price to acquire Russell Westbrook. But we recorded an episode the other day where we were saying the Thunder would be lucky to get one positive value asset in exchange for Russ.
And they just got four.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we understand why Houston did this. It's basically a challenge trade. It's just saying, we think we can get more out of Russ than you can, or whatever. We think Russ is going to raise our floor such that those picks aren't going to be that great, whatever. But the fact that the two picks coming are in 2024 and 2026, at that point, those guys are going to be in their mid-30s. So even if this gambit does work out, which it for the next couple seasons, it very well might. I mean, the West is wide open right now. What the hell? Get funky. Try something weird. But come 2024, there's no guarantee either of those guys are even in Houston anymore, much less are playing at the prime that they are right now. I like this deal a lot more for OKC than I do for Houston. I'll lay it out like that.
But I think you just touched on it. You said they might not even be there. Look at how many guys change teams. There's 10 household names, and I'm not even including D'Angelo Russell in this. Like, it's Kawhi, Paul George, Anthony Davis. All the 10 household names changed teams this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie Irving spent 2 years in Boston. Al Horford spent 3 years in Boston.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant spent 3 years in Golden State.
Right.
The old days of a player being with an organization, you know, for eternity, they are over. So when you trade draft picks that are 5 or 6 years down the line, that's That's a huge gamble. Huge. Right. Because the entire identity of the league and talent distribution can change within 12 months, 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
I would never trade. If I was a GM, I would never trade that many picks in that, you know, in advance to that extent. That's, yeah. It's just insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because we've now seen it in three separate transactions this summer. Right. Anthony Davis, Paul George, and now Russell Westbrook, where teams willingly gave up multiple picks far in advance. And as you said, you can't predict out that far. No matter what you do, you cannot reasonably project out, oh, sure, we'll still be good in 2024. You have no way right. of knowing. I mean, the NBA has seismically changed this summer. And it's already gearing up to be another seismic change in 2021 when Kawhi can become a free agent, Paul George can become a free agent, LeBron can become a free agent, Bradley Beal will be a free agent, Blake Griffin can become a free agent. For all we know, there's going to be an entirely different hierarchy in both conferences 2 years down the road. So, right. And then
this is a new NBA.
Yeah, right. So I'm with you. I think it's super risky to be giving up picks this far in advance. I think it's brilliant for OKC to be acquiring these kind of picks mm-hmm. just because, I mean, these picks do have a mystery box element to them. And we saw that with Boston over the past few years where they were rumored in basically every big name trade because they had all of these future picks from teams coming in. And then come 2019, they didn't make a move. And those picks turned out to be 14, 20, and 22 in a crappy draft.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I mean, they picked, you know, who I think are good players with some of them. Or they flipped 20 for 24 and 33, whatever. But, you know, Grant Williams at 22, great value. Carson Edwards at 33. Kid's great lighting value. Up summer league. Yeah, he's going to be a nice player. They got good value for those guys, but still... Those guys are now losing value because they are actual names instead of, oh, this is a world of possibilities that you can have. So now right. OKC, it looks like I'm looking at an ESPN story right now, and it's, you know, they have kind of the layout of all of the picks they own. And except for in 2025, they theoretically have multiple first-round picks in every draft between 2020 and 2026. Now, some are protected, right. some may not convey. But they have more trade ammunition than Danny Ainge would know what to do with.
Right. And that's their plan. Because yeah. they have Shea Gilgeous-Alexander on the roster.
Yeah.
So they can build something. They can go out and trade a bunch of those picks. And here's what I would do. Instead of going all in for the superstar that teams are doing right now, where they're mm-hmm. just selling off their future because they want to be in on the 2-year championship window, or 3 years if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
What I would do here, if I'm OKC, I would try to identify to the best of my ability what type of player who is still on a rookie contract with at least a year, maybe two left. I would figure out who of those guys out there are someone I can see be put next to Shea and play for a long term, because you have team control on the rookie contracts at the very least.
Right.
And you have team control in terms of them hitting restricted free agency.
Yeah.
So, and with that many draft picks, there's a chance you can get a conceivable amount of players, established players, still on rookie contracts, who you then have team control over. So if OKC goes out and spends those draft picks on, let's say, three, maybe four very, very solid young players who are, you know, cost controlled and team controlled for a long time, mm-hmm. and they try to build something up off of that, they will still have cap space in some of those summers when everyone else is off the cap, because yep. rookie contracts, even though they increased by 50% last year, or was it the year before? I don't even remember. They're still cheap.
Right.
So that's what I would do personally, because then mm-hmm. I avoid that whole, you know, mystery box thing. I right. go get a known quantity or a known that is quality as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try to build off of that instead, because we know that going all in for a superstar, what does that really matter when they leave in 2 years?
Right. Yeah, I would much rather be in OKC's shoes right now than I would Houston's.
Yeah. Yeah, hell yeah. And so many other teams, for that matter. Like, we don't know what's going to happen in just a year.
Right. Yeah.
Everything is crazy.
Howard Beck, I think we mentioned it last episode, too, but it was a really good column. So go read it. Yeah. It's on Bleacher Report about just the player empowerment movement. And basically, I forget if it was an agent or an executive. I think it was an executive who basically said, look, you can do your best to, you know, make your franchise appealing, but if Kawhi leaves after winning a title and winning finals MVP, and you're giving him the most money and he still leaves, there's only so much you can do. So the best way to build a franchise right now is to be flexible and to be able to pivot from we have a star-centric model that's ready to win right now to, okay, we're going to rebuild, but we're going to have a boatload of picks and we'll have a nice young prospect. OKC's done a phenomenal job just resetting the table, and they might not be done. They still have Steven Adams they can offer. Chris Paul, we don't know what his future is in OKC, whether he's... It sounds like he might not be long for there. I think the speculation about him taking a buyout is nonsense. He'd have to give up.
Yeah.
That's a non-starter. Yeah. Way too much money. It's not going to happen. So he's not
going to the Lakers. Let's just explain why. Because even though, like, theoretically, even if Chris Paul gives up like half his salary, OKC would still have half of that salary on their books. And that is a significant chunk of change.
Right.
It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. He's owed $124 million over the next 3 years. Even if you can't just buy him out of this year, you would have to buy him out the other 2 years as well. Buyout's not an option. But OKC now has a bunch of picks it can dangle. If it's so desperate if it can't get out of the tax in any other way, and I think they can, I'm not too worried about that, but if it's, you know, come February and the trade deadline's here and they're still a couple million over the tax and they're looking for a way to dump CP3, now they have a million picks they can use to get out of that contract.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably see if I can do it before the season so I can give Gilgeous Alexander the starting spot immediately.
Yeah.
Because he's fantastic.
Right.
And I think, honestly, that's the Thunder got him in the Paul George deal. Yep. That's the type of contract I was talking about before.
For sure.
A rookie contract of someone where you identified someone great.
Yeah.
Like, if they can find a bunch of Gilgeous Alexanders, oh my God. That would be huge.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen a number of 2017 draftees traded this summer. Markelle Fultz, the number one pick, was traded for what's probably going to be 3 second-round picks and Jonathan Simmons, who the Sixers had to give up a second-round pick to dump.
Well, there's an asterisk with Fultz, though. But
Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart were all included in the Anthony Davis deal. Phoenix paid to get rid of Josh Jackson, the number 4 pick. So 3 of the top 4 picks from the 2017 draft are no longer on their teams. Frankie Smokes in New York. It seems like they're more than willing to shop him around. I don't think OKC would have to give up all that much to get him. Charlotte might be starting to, if they start acting like a real NBA franchise instead of a pretend we can make the playoffs with a total crap capped out roster. Malik Monk could maybe be gettable. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think Brooklyn is smarter than this, but if they're really committed to DeAndre Jordan, maybe Jared Allen becomes available. Mo Bamba, we talked about him last episode with the Magic. Now that they re-signed Vooch and Kem Birch, all of a sudden your front court logjam is now locked in for even longer.
Or hell, like Lauri Markkanen in Chicago.
Yeah. Ooh. That'd be...
No, yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, it's a high-quality rookie contract player.
Sure.
But they have the picks to make that happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Like that was just an example. Theoretically, Jason Tatum.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, they have the ammunition to go get whoever at this point.
Right. No, they really do.
Let me throw you a name here that it doesn't make sense for them right now because they just upgraded their entire roster. Mm-hmm. But Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Like, if you throw enough picks towards, you know, Utah's direction for Donovan Mitchell, at some point they're going to be like, no, 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 thank you. Oh, another one? Yeah. Mm, well, me, no, we're... you're offering another one. Hang on. Let's just go to... Hey, Adam! Hey, we need to talk. So,
yeah,
you can do that.
That's what happened with Paul George.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it just hit a point where I'm sure when Paul George approached them and said, I want to be traded to the Clippers, they were pissed. And we're like, no, piss off. But then the Clippers were like, here, we'll give you 3 first-round picks. 4 right. first-round picks. 4 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps. And after a while, you just have to say yes. It's just too big of a haul to turn down.
Yep.
And now, I mean, they've just gained so much in draft capital over the past week between this, George, and Jeremy Grant. They got, you know, a 2020 from Denver, which is not going to be great, but teams tend to overvalue picks in trades. Mm-hmm. They have more flexibility than any team in the NBA.
Let me throw this one, this final one at you. I know they have Shai, but he can go, you know, he can play the 2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
De'Aaron Fox.
Oof. Oh, man. If the Kings were... I would not trust the Kings to...
No, right?
if you could pry him away, by all means. Because I would not trust the Kings with those picks. I would not trust the Kings to negotiate fair value for Fox. I think they would probably undersell him. That's part of
why I mentioned him. Yeah.
Yep. So, let's now... Since we've already kind of merged into the Thunder here, let's just talk about it from... Where they go from here, basically. Do you think a Chris Paul trade is next? Do you think, I guess, apparently I saw Miami being thrown around as a possible destination. I guess he might want to play with Jimmy Butler, which might even be funnier than Jimmy and Russ.
I honestly think that would be pretty awesome.
Really?
I think, yeah, because, look, Russ is volatile in his own way, but that's more on the court. Jimmy and Chris Paul seem way more aligned mentally on, you know, in terms of away from the court. Like, they both expect the best from everyone alongside them, and they both work extremely hard. I have a feeling those two are just gonna find each other and be best of pals. I really think that would work out well. I don't think it would work out for literally everyone else on the roster.
Right, that's my concern.
Yeah, but in just for those two, I think it would be perfect.
It might be. Or, I mean, it would either work out brilliantly and they would get along fantastically and everyone else on the roster would hate them, or they would butt heads and it would just be a complete and total meltdown from day one.
I mean, remember what happened when Jimmy played with Wade in Chicago?
Yeah.
Those two got on famously.
Right.
It was everyone else who just couldn't stand that pairing. This is just going to be a sequel of that. Besides, Jimmy has kind of entered the whole banana boat, you know, inner circle.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that just off of that alone, he and Chris Paul are just tight.
Oh, man. That would be so bad. I genuinely hope it happens. But
I honestly think it would be better than Russ and Jimmy. I think that even on the court, I know that Russ is the better player, but Paul is, like, let's just be honest here, he's still a better shooter.
That's not a hot take.
That's not a hot take. And even though Russ is a fantastic playmaker, he doesn't have just this sheer vision
right
that Chris Paul has. And with Jimmy being able to play a little bit more off the ball and having, you know, him just bounce for lobs and cut and do all these things off the ball with CP3 feeding him, that could be fun. There's an element, there's a world we're in. If Chris Paul lands in Miami, that pairing could be fun to watch.
I'll give you that, if only just for morbid curiosity.
Right. No, I completely follow you in that sense. And I mean, the only way this would work and it would be positive is if Bam Adebayo and Justice Winslow are like all in on, you know, hashtag team grind.
Right.
Like, right. If they are, awesome. If they're not, eh. But then again, Miami is known for hardcore practices. They are known for working their asses off.
Yeah.
So maybe that just makes everything a little bit more suitable for Chris.
I don't know, man. I think that would be a complete disaster, but I'm all here for it because I just think it'd be hilarious.
It could be. It could very very easily be that. Yeah, sure. What about Minnesota? Could Minnesota be a destination?
For like Teague and Covington or something like that?
Teague, Jang, something like that?
I guess so. If Russell isn't... I feel like Russell is just going to go there, though. I feel like that's kind of just set in stone. They just couldn't come to a terms on a deal. So now the Warriors... I would be surprised if the Warriors and Timberwolves don't already have a deal in place. Just call us back December 15th.
What should that deal be, though?
I think, like, Teague and Covington seems fine.
Yeah, he comes off the cap. Like, you don't trade for Teague the player, trade for Teague the contract.
Right.
Yeah.
And Covington's just a nice fit next to those guys.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, Covington would actually be really nice in Golden State.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll have options with Paul. I just think it'll take some of the picks they just got for Russ, they're going to have to give up to get out Paul's contract.
Yeah, probably.
But if they don't trade him, they go into the season with, let's say they're done, Thunder are done making moves for now. Mm-hmm. They go in the season with CP3, Shea, Dennis Schroeder still, Steven Adams. Do they have any chance of making the playoffs in the West?
So, I mean, on paper, no. But Gilgeous Alexander is so good.
Yeah.
And I think he could be one of those guys who just takes a major second-year leap.
It wouldn't shock me.
I mean, he's good. He's really good. The way that he can control a game and... I mean, I know that 20 minutes ago I said I would rather have him just start and not, you know, playing behind Chris Paul.
Right.
But I'm sort of talking myself into the idea that Paul, at the very least, could teach him a few tricks.
Yeah,
oh, which would just make him even more dangerous moving forward. So maybe there is merit to the idea of having him around for half a year just for the sake of developing Gilgeous Alexander.
Right. Yeah, because I don't think the Thunder would be a playoff team either, and it's no disrespect to them. It's just looking at the way. If they were in the East, they might be. But looking at the West, in their division alone, Nuggets, Timberwolves, Trailblazers, Jazz will all have playoff aspirations going into the year. The Timberwolves are, you know, the runt of the litter there, but they could at least potentially cobble together 40 wins. In the Pacific, the Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, and Kings will all go into the year thinking they are possible playoff contenders. And then in the Southwest, the Rockets definitely will think they're playoff contenders now. Pelicans could be. I'd like their chances better than that Thunder team. And the Spurs as well. I think the only teams, the Suns will talk themselves into being a contender, but they are not. The Grizzlies are not. And I don't think the Mavericks have enough quite yet to be in that conversation. I think they'll be decent, frisky. They'll win 35 some games, but I don't think they're legit contenders.
I think you're underrating Luka's second year, though.
It's possible. I saw a report today that Kristaps is going to get load managed this year.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just don't know.
Give it one more chance to go through Luka.
I know, but what they have nothing else. They're very
Luka's enough, man.
Yeah. All I'm saying is. The you know, the 9 through 12 in the West is still very good.
Yeah.
It's much better.
Yeah.
You know, the East is very top heavy. There are still a couple very good teams at the top, and there are some that should be clear playoff teams. But again, there's a very soft bubble there where 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 in the East are all somewhat mediocre.
And, there are only two top teams in the East.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
And
I mean, Indiana has a shot, but it's a long shot to break that.
Right. Toronto could be if things break right. The Celtics could be if they, it's, you know, it's like the Raptors, Celtics, Pacers, and Nets, I think. If things go their way, they could jump up to that top tier. But yeah, I mean, Milwaukee and Philly are the clear two heading into the season. But after that, I just think, sure, the Heat are probably a playoff team just by default. But after that, I mean, it's the it's like who wants to back into the playoffs? The Pistons or the Magic?
Yeah. Because Wizards, no more Magic in the playoffs. I'm sorry, but that was an awful series, and they just did not get better this year.
Hey, they won game one.
It's against the Raptors, doesn't count.
I know. But, you know, like the Hornets are out, the Wizards are out, the Cavs are out, the Knicks are out. There are a lot of teams that are just going to start the year with zero playoff aspirations. Yeah. The Hawks are, they're building something nice, but they're not a playoff team this year. So, again, if the Thunder were in the East, they would have a chance. But, yeah, I mean, as currently constructed, I don't think so. So I it would not surprise me at all if this is not the end of the Thunder teardown. And we continue to see them. I think smart teams, if there is a prospect on the Thunder that you like, you should call up the Thunder right now and start offering picks, because they're clearly in seller's mode.
Well, I mean, Jeremy Grant is already traded, so.
I know. Yeah, I'm ready, or I need to write a column after this about Jeremy Grant and the Nuggets on the Basketball Writers. So
I love that, by the way.
I do too. Yeah, go to bballwriters.com tomorrow. Use the code TheNBAPod. You'll get 10% off your daily, monthly, or annual subscription, and you can see me singing the praises of Jeremy Grant on the Nuggets. And, of course, it's going to get buried because this Russ trade is going to soak up all of the attention for the next 3 days. Any final thoughts on this trade from either side, Mort?
Well, no, I mean, I think obviously it was inevitable. Russ wanted out. Chris Paul wanted out, regardless of what he said afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, so this was meant to be in some capacity.
Sure.
I think you're right in the sense that Houston could be significantly better if everything falls right for him. But I think a lot has to basically be absolutely correct for every particular instance. Like, Russ has to accept this whole new way of life where he doesn't have media control, where he doesn't have as much carte blanche with the basketball, where he has to share with a high-volume ball handler and shot taker. Like, if everything falls correctly, then yeah, they could be good. But at the end of the day, I'm still struggling seeing how they get deep into the playoffs with Russell Westbrook, you know, they're as the second best player on the team.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the on-court fit of Russ and Harden, there are a lot of questions to sort out in the half-court offense and on defense. I think in transition they'll be great, but the shooting woes are a concern for Russ. And if you're going to have Russ be the point guard and be as ball dominant as he was, then what does that mean for James Harden? Because he can operate off the ball, for sure. He's much better at that than Russ, but he doesn't want to. Right. He was very effective on the ball. And you're cutting down on those isolations that have been a staple of the D'Antoni offense, at least, you know, since his time in Houston.
Mm. So when can KD opt out and join them?
I know. I'm telling you, man. NBA 2K12 with that Thunder team. I guess Ibaka is up after next year.
Yeah.
KD has a player option the fourth year, so after the 2021-2022 season.
Oh, and then let's get really nuts, because at this point, Reggie Jackson must have realized that he's not a starting caliber point guard.
Oh, God.
Let's just get the entire band together in Houston.
Maury would like that. Tillman Fertitta probably would not.
Yeah, no. Oh, God. Well, it's it's 5:30 in the morning.
Good.
And yeah, I'm just hoping there are going to be no more trades today. And Brian, from here on out, at least for the foreseeable future, It's okay with you. I'm not going to stay up until 4 to check Twitter, right?
I think so. Yes. Well, okay. Tomorrow, if anything big happens, it's literally my 5-year wedding anniversary, so we will not be doing a podcast either way. But,
then I'll sleep. Then yes. I'll go to bed early. And you know what? You know what that'll mean? That'll mean that at some point after I've gone to bed early, my wife will tap me on the shoulder and say, it's time. And then we have to rush to the hospital because,
So enjoy your one night of sleep. And thank you, as always, to everyone for listening to us. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback, and it would really help us out. And we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Zaporik, and I was joined, as always, by a very dedicated Morten Jensen. Mort, go get some sleep, and pray to God the NBA stay quiet tomorrow.
Yeah, I definitely will. Good night, Brian.
All right, night, man.